listening to our speaker. If you have a drinking problem, we hope that you may pause in hearing this story tonight and think one of three things. Yes, that happened to me. Or more important, yes, I felt like that. Or most important, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. Andy. I'm real excited about tonight's speaker. Andy is a good friend of mine. We share CA home group together, and I remember the first time I saw Andy, I thought he was a newcomer. He was in really bad pain, you know. He was in really bad pain, and I can tell you this much: Andy got linked up with some good teachers. He started working some damn steps. And he got connected to some fucking power. This guy is not the same guy I met. Well, actually, he is the same guy, man. He's just been unblocked. You know what I'm saying? The Andy that was within has been unleashed, you know? And this man is of service. He throws his heart and his soul into seeking power and getting connected with God and God's children. So I'm real excited to have him up here tonight. And with that, I give you my good friend, Andy.
Hey, everybody. I'm Andy. I'm an alcoholic.
Andy.
Thank Bob. I fucked this up. I'm going to make me look at it's the first time I've ever been to this meeting is huge. A lot of young people, too. It's awesome to see you guys. I'm 31. I was born November 15th, 1980. I was born in Augusta and moved to Canton, Georgia. I grew up in Canton, Georgia. It's a little small town north of here. My goal here today is just going to tell you the truth. From my experience, the truth is always real powerful. So I don't really have to force that. So I'll start out by telling you I was born to two parents that are still together. They love each other very much, and they're awesome. They love me, too. I got two younger brothers, and growing up, I was a pretty at-ease kid. I remember feeling pretty awesome a lot of the time, which was cool. Maybe third grade, I was about 8 years old. Some weird thing started happening to me over the summer. I started saying cuss words every probably 2-3 seconds. Come to find out, that's a thing called corporalalia that's synonymous with Tourette syndrome. So, boom. Third grade Tourette syndrome. Holy shit. So we'll start there. Anybody ever felt different from their peers? Everybody should probably raise their hand. I did. I was in third grade going to a neurologist. It was crazy, to say the least. They put me on Haldol. Anybody been to the Looney Bin? Anybody got locked up and put back? Okay, Haldol is what they'd probably give you if it wasn't for Florazine. Third grade, little Andy, partying on some Haldol. Cussing. It was wild. It was a lot of time. We moved out of Canton pretty quick and into the woods. That was the only place we really felt like sheltered enough to be. Before that, my family was pretty involved in social aspects of town and civic duties, and we moved in pretty quickly. I felt pretty embarrassed. And I blamed myself for a lot of those problems. And, you know, I think that was a big root problem of my spiritual malady, which I came to find out that was really my big problem. The other medicines I was on made me gain a lot of weight. So I got fat. And I was saying the S word every 3 seconds, and I was on Haldol. So from third grade to fourth grade, I became this gigantic cussing Tourette bomb crazy ass. And so from third grade until about college, I really don't remember a whole lot because neuroleptics erase your memory. So I had a high school that I was there, but if it wasn't the picture that I can see right now, I won't be able to tell you about it. Eighth grade, I completely blocked out whether that was psychologically or not, but they put me in the trailers with some people who had some severe learning disabilities, which I had. So I grew up feeling and knowing that I was bodily and mentally different from my peers, and pretty psychologically damning. So that being said, I went to college and Well, I'll back up a little bit. In high school, I started hitting it a little bit. Got pretty wasted a couple of times. Burned my arm with a cigarette. This is from 97, so this is a long time. I've had this for a while. The cigarette, I think, was still partially in my arm when I woke up. And then in college, I smoked a lot of pot. That was awesome for a long time, man. And I really do think that I found my solution with drinking and with using other substances for a long time. It worked really, really, really well. I felt better, calmer, faster, whatever, and it was amazing. And then one day I just realized that I was playing bubble bobble or something, not going to class, and I realized I hadn't taken my medicine for Tourette's in like months. Like one of those stoner moments. What? Oh, geez. I better take that, or do I need to? Okay. And that's when I realized that I kind of grew out of Tourette's for some reason. Maybe I found a cure. It was cool. So I went about, and I was still very socially awkward, but I felt like after that was kind of like gone, I felt like I had to catch up. So I started learning how people acted. Because before then, I was a stud-in. I didn't know anybody or how to act or how to be a friend or talk to anybody. And I felt completely different from people. So if anybody was laughing and I was sitting at a different table, I automatically assumed that was me they were laughing at. So, I got a haircut and made myself act really cool. I studied, saw people that I thought were cool and studied how they acted. It was a really weird kid, you know. But it paid off, and people started saying, like, who's this guy, Andy? And it helped. I had a really good buddy that was kind of popular. So in about a six-month period, I became pretty cool dude, socially. Sounds so weird, but it's all I wanted in my whole life is to be cool, you know. So and that happened. And I started building some self-esteem. But I was drinking a lot. A lot. And so was everybody else. But to me, it was a little bit more liberating, I think. I hit it pretty hard for a couple of years, and then I met a girl, which was awesome. And it was the first time I'd really had anybody reciprocate feelings of true love. And it was intoxicating, so much so that she convinced me I didn't need to drink, and I didn't need to use. And I tried really hard not to, and I didn't for probably a year and a half, 2 years. Eventually, I felt so crazy, so bad. Like I was fighting with her on a regular basis, and I was restless, man, and I was irritable, discontented, skin was crawling. I felt like shit all the time. Nothing was right. And I just knew there was a tall boy waiting for me to make me feel better. I needed that Miller High Life experience. So that's on my birthday. She bought me some tickets to some show or something, and we'd been going to premarital counseling, and I mean, talk about dragging this thing out. There's a point to all this, I swear to God. I broke up with her in premarital counseling because I felt like it was a safe place and she couldn't hit me or, like, stab me or anything. But I needed to drink and she wouldn't let me. And that was the bottom line. And she let me drink a couple times when I was with her, and that was cool, but I could never really get smashed. And I needed to get smashed. I couldn't explain it. I just needed that. So we broke up. And needless to say, she did not want to talk to me ever again. But that was when I'd lost all control. I didn't realize it at the time, so I didn't even try to control myself. I just knew that I was ready to party, and I did. Partied hard, as hard as I could. I slept on my buddy's couch for another year after that, which I thought was okay because it's no big deal. Then I moved up to the mountains after that because you can't really party like I want to party in an apartment, and they won't let you stay if you do. So we found a place on the side of the mountain to rent out that was, it was nice, man. It was, nobody bothered you. You didn't have to bother anybody if you didn't want to. That was when I started using everything that I could get my hands on to feel better, feel different, to get high, drinking, using, whatever. And then one day, one of my really good friends said, hey, it'd be really cool if you just play foosball and just take maybe drink three beers. it just plays foosball with us and lets us hang out. I was like, yeah, you know, Aaron, you're right. And she was cool, and I really liked her, so I was going to try. And, you know, 30 minutes in, I had 3 beers, and I was pissed, and I didn't want to stop, and I couldn't, and I didn't. And I got so drunk that night that I got arrested. I got a DUI. And didn't tell anybody about it, and hired a lawyer, and kind of slept under the rug. And parents didn't find out until it was all over with. And then a couple months later, I hit the wall again, and I'd go for weeks on binges at this point. You know, been a couple of months where 2 or 3 weeks out of the month, I was blackout drunk, and I don't know a lot of what I did. I know I didn't do a lot of cool stuff. I know I had a mattress that smelled like a bus station bathroom, and all my clothes were pretty much burned, or you know, I had a pair of overalls that I wore, and I cut them off in the summer. I got here. I didn't have a shirt. I wore Birkenstocks and I had a beard that was like that. Living on the side of the mountain. Yeah. It was not awful. So that's how I went to jail the last time. Like looking like that, and they had to hog tie me and put me in the back of the car, and somehow I found a way to light a cigarette. And my buddy Brian and I got arrested at the same time, and this guy was absolutely nuts. I'd never met anybody that was worse than I was, and he was. And it gave me a reason to keep going. Like, the stories I heard about that guy and the things I saw him do subsequently, I never met a match. The last time I got arrested, I ended up staying in jail for a little bit, and had some time to think about it. They put me in the detox ward because they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me or what I was on. They thought I was going to die if I just went to gym pop. So, woke up with a Bible on my chest and like a nurse taking my pulse. And at that moment, I realized I was screwed. And this was a repeat offense. Like, this is not unlike the last time, and it was only getting worse. And I could see a cyclical pattern developing. And I could not find the reason, and I could not find the will to stop it. And I had tried countless, I really had tried quite a few times to make myself be cool with this, with alcohol. Just be cool like everybody else, man. Have fun, let loose, and then stop. And sure as shit, I couldn't do it. And, you know, it was unexplainable by anybody I'd ever met. No one knew what was quite wrong with me. Everybody was already familiar with that part of me that was, there was something wrong with me anyway, so they probably just chalked it up to that. Nobody I knew in Canton got sober. They died, or they moved to where I was already living when they retired. It was a gated community on the side of a mountain. So I felt pretty screwed. And so I got out of jail the last time, and my dad called me. He never called. Call him with the message, yep, reckon we'll see you when you get here, probably about 5 o'clock, any later, I don't want to know you. Okay. Went home, and there was if anybody ever walked into an intervention, you know what I'm talking about. If you ever walk into a room, and there's a whole bunch of people, and they're all your family, and then somebody that you probably don't know very well, or an open chair, you're walking into an intervention. It's happening. So and it will continue. That's the way it is. So that's what happened to me, and I was given the opportunity to try something different. At first I was like, no, what are you talking about? I'm 23. I'm a grown ass man. No way, bro. My dad quickly pointed out that I had overalls I didn't have a shirt on, and I'd rolled around in a weed bush. Probably did that day. So anyway, I reluctantly, because they said, look, we don't want to know you. You scared the shit out of us. You're a bad influence on your younger brothers who look up to you and are devastated every time they hear something happen to you. Your mom has not slept in 3 or 4 years, and I'm at my wit's end trying to figure out what to do for you. See, my father's mother, my grandma, was an alcoholic, and he would commonly come home from school and find her passed out on the floor. So it broke his heart to know that I was going through the same shit. And I saw it all in that one moment. I guess they had been saying and acting the same way the whole time I was doing it, but for some reason I was ready to see it. some reason I had had lost the ability to blind myself to it, and I was ready. So that being said, I spent the weekend detoxing in my mother's basement. I didn't know that detox was a thing. No one I knew got off of drugs and alcohol. They just died or went to jail. You know, they didn't quit. They just kept going. And so I sweated and shook and cried and threw up and all this other crazy stuff. And I was in the basement of my mother's house. Like, talk about, like, I would rather have been in jail. That Monday I went to his rehab, and the guy was like, yeah. Yeah, you know, we just like to have fun, and we smoke cigarettes, and we drink coffee, and we have a good time. And, you know, we're really good people, and I think you are too. I think you could really get a lot out of this. I think it'd be fun. You know, it's just a bunch of sober dudes. Fuck that, man. Like, okay. Because, I mean, what I was looking at is, like, okay, free ride for a couple months while I fatten up, because I've been on some accelerants, if you would want to, you know. And so I was $1.75. I had no clothes, no shoes, no nothing. My Jeep was a wreck, and I was just completely worthless. So I was like, okay, man, sober dude. And I was 23, and the majority of the people I went to rehab with were like 18, 19. Again, I'm different from people. I'm pretty used to being different from people, so I'm different from these guys. I'll give it a shot. I was not ready for what happened after that, because as I found out that I kind of started working some of the steps that they, you know, kind of shared with me, and it wasn't exactly the same as AA, but for some reason I needed and heard God in that moment. I had heard what I needed to have, and something happened where I was given this, like, I would call it grace, but it was this breathing room to separate from the experience I was having and have the experience that I was currently in. And I can't really there's really not great enough words to describe that, because I wasn't necessarily different, but I wasn't necessarily the same. I would consider that a semi-sudden connection, and it gave me what I would like to call grace. And what I found from that point on was that grace is huge. I didn't realize it. Not in any sort of, not to offend anyone, but not in any sort of biblical thing, because I was vehemently anti-God, vehemently anti any sort of spirituality. I really didn't appreciate anything that I hadn't seen doing mushrooms, so I really wasn't really into this cosmic thing. I was a heady thinker kind of guy, but I just couldn't grasp this whole concept of God. And so when they talked about that, I politely evaded and ignored and excused, and, you know, I'm different. But for some reason, that didn't matter. I was given that. And I call it grace, but also call it a surrender, you know. The pain and the suffering and whatever was bad enough to give me the view, the scope of the thing. And I connected with it there. So they let me out of this rehab 2.5 years later. Shocker, man. Unreal, right? Like, you stay in rehab for that long. I didn't know that. My asshole from my elbow. No one I knew had ever gotten sober. So I didn't know that was wrong, or right, or whatever, or different. I thought, hey, you know what? Sober dude, smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee. That's cool, bro. Yeah! I worked at, this place called Play It Against Sports, and I was 26 and a half years old, and I dropped out of college. I didn't have shit. I was still pretty bad off. But I was not drinking, and I was not using, and I was somewhat happy. I was still doing a lot of crazy shit that I needed to address later, but I'm getting to that. I was happy enough to continue into AA, which is, you know, weird to say, because the funniest part about this is I was working 12 steps and they weren't exactly AA, and I would not ever recommend that to anyone. My experience is that because I needed it, and because a connection was made to God there, it worked. The other explanations, I can't even begin. When I came to AA, it was suggested that I got a sponsor. Like, no brainer, right? If you've been around for a little while, you know that. If you're new, you've probably heard that a million times. If it's your first meeting, awesome. Hey, man. Hey, Warren. I'm glad to tell you for your first meeting that you do need a sponsor for this thing. It's really important. You can't. I'll tell you my experience on that. I waited a couple weeks and I scoped out the meetings, you know, and I was like, I want a dude that's cool. They like to get down and party, but he's also like pretty stable. And then, you know, somebody said, you know, you need to find somebody to have what you want, you know, like somebody that's cool, like you want to be cool or something like that. This whole thing in my head of being cool is still there. So I think the guy that was righteous, man, he's actually here. This is Deva right here. He's really cool. And I was like, hey, man, can you be my sponsor? He's like, yeah, let's meet up and go through the steps. It's like, all right. And he pretty much was like, look, this is a big book. Get one. And we're going to sit down and we're going to go through page by page. And we're going to go through and we're going to learn what's going on in this big book. And when it says to do something, we're going to do it. And we're going to highlight the prayers. We're going to underline some things my sponsor told me. And it's going to be awesome. And that's what we did. We commit to work through the steps. And I got a fond understanding of it, and I worked, and it worked for me. I started to get and feel and be better. When it came to step one, I really didn't think much about it. I was like, okay, yeah, power, that's fine, let's move on. Step two, sanity is really just doing what I didn't do before. The third step was, pretty easy. I decided I would go through the rest of the steps. The fourth step, I did an inventory. I was really scared of an inventory. I really wasn't honest about how scared I was about the inventory. And I really wasn't as honest as I should have been on the inventory because there were things that I left out on purpose because I was never going to tell somebody about that. Okay? Don't recommend doing that. Please do not do that. If you have considered doing that or if you've done that recently, please don't wait on that. Redo it. The fifth step I did with my sponsor, and it was kind of funny. I set it all up, and we ordered pizza, and it was really cool. Spent my hour with God, and we took the list and that I'd made, and I don't know what came over me, but I just decided I was going to throw it in this little fire that I'd made, this inventory, this precious inventory I'd just written. I threw it in the fire. I didn't want anybody else to see it. It's like, well, that. We'll probably be able to figure it out, man, but that was your list of people you're going to have to go back to. And I was like, fuck. Okay, shit. Oh, okay, cool, whatever. I'm still a pretty righteous dude at this point. I haven't really grown up. So I was like, okay, shit, well, I guess we'll wean it, man. I didn't really have a firm grasp on sobriety or life. I made a little quick list, and I started making some amends, and it came to the 10th and the 11th and the 12th step, and that was my walking around steps. I was to start to pray for some peace and serenity, and ask God to help me with patience and tolerance. And that's what I did. And I went to a meeting in the time that I'd been working with my sponsor, started going to a pretty set schedule of meetings that he went to and other people I knew went to. And it was awesome. I got to know people in the fellowship, and so I went to a Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday night meeting, and the other night kind of hung out. It was cool. And so the Sunday night, the first Sunday, the first hour, I was able to sponsor anybody. I raised my hand, I got two sponsees. And it was killer because I was like, holy shit, that's awesome, dude. That's really, what am I going to do? What do I do with these guys? and it ended up being fine. And sure enough, the next Sunday, two more dudes, just like that, right? So I'm sponsoring four dudes. I'm like, oh, it's cool, man. The next, like, Thursday, man, two more dudes. And I'm like, cool, whoa, wait a minute. Is it a limit? Should I cap the boss? How many days in the week? What am I doing? Oh, shit. And then somebody was like, yeah, or David, I think, was like, yeah, I think you should probably, that's probably good. What's that right there, you know? I'm just busting it out, and I'm working with these guys, and I'm like, I'm really happy. I'm pumped, and I'm helping people, and that sets off a light in my head. I forgot to tell you guys before, when I was living in the mountains, I was kind of going to college a little bit or whatever, and I was going to be a kindergarten teacher. But, you know, and I was also smoking a lot of accelerants and drinking the high tech. And it was bad. Moonshine and meth. It was not good. But I was also a preschool teacher. preschool teacher, okay?
Yeah.
Classroom of 34 and 5-year olds. I commonly fell off the swing set at recess with them. Not cool. Anyway, so that was my profession, that was my trade, and that's what I dropped out of school trying to pursue a degree in education. I started helping these guys, and it clicked in me, and God gave me this intuition, this spark, this notion. I was like, oh my God, I love helping people. I love it. I don't know what it is. I just really, really do. I love it. It's like a fire burns in my heart for this. It's my passion. And before that, I really didn't even know that you could have, like, intuition before. That was that, man. So, and I swear to God, man, like, 2 days later, I found out that all these guys go to the same rehab. Like, duh, okay. That figures. And they go home and like, this guy's pretty fucking cool, man. So they all asked me. And this rehab just was up the road. And I was like, wow, that could be. And then their executive director called me and hired me as a tech. And so I worked with them. And that was awesome. It was really awesome. It was the coolest thing that ever happened to me. I was working at, like, Starbucks and, like, Publix and, like, weird places. And I'd never had a professional aspect of my life. And here it was. And it was so linear that I couldn't ignore it. There was a power greater than myself at work in my life. And then, you know, and so I kept doing what I was doing. And I kept working with a lot of dudes. And I kept working at this place. And I got better at what I did professionally, and I got better at what I did in sobriety. But I was still doing a lot of crazy, crazy, crazy things to people that I really claimed or really wanted to, had the best intentions of loving and doing right by. And I'd been perpetually single since I got sober, too. So 4.5 years later, I finally found a girl I really want to date out. It's cool shit, right? And I start chatting with this girl, and you know, the first thing I noticed is that, you know, it's one of those things that I can actually let this girl, like, I can actually let this girl touch the radio because she has a good taste in music, and that's big for me, you know? So, her name was Suzanne, and I like that too because you don't meet a lot of Suzannes, and, you know, so I asked her out, and it was cool, and then 3 months later, she's been sober for quite some time. She has 13 years now. She's going on 14. She got sober when she was 13 in 1998. I mean, whatever, you know. And so Suzanne, 3 months after meeting me, cool dude Andy was like, no, nothing to lose. She's like, look, you're out of control, and I'm not having it. We'll see you, buddy. Yeah, yeah. I was like, what the? Really? I'm awesome. Are you shitting me? And it brought me to a place where, for the first time in life, I realized I was being an asshole. I was sober and happy, but I was doing some things that were not cool. I was blowing money fast. I was living in a way that stepped on other people's toes, and I was ignorant of the fact that I was not the only person to do it. First time I'd been made aware of it. So cool to be me. I'm sorry about you, but all right, I'm cool. I'm awesome. And that next year, after being made aware of that from that cataclysmic event, it took that to shake me to reality. I was miserable for an entire year. And I didn't quit thinking about Suzanne, and I didn't quit thinking about all the other stuff. And I continued to spend more money to throw at the problem than I had. And I continued to treat people even worse because it was what I was used to. And I got on the internet and dated a lot of women, which I would not recommend to anyone here. Or men, or whatever you do. I don't care. Don't. Did not work for me. So I was 27 at this point, 27 and a half, 28 almost, no money, no stable relationship with anything that moved, and miserable. Absolutely miserable, but and in my workplace, I'd also become very miserable. I had worked my way up in the world and had assumed a position as a supervisor overnight. And that was the way that I was told that I would have my promotion. And I had a really big problem with what I found out was going to be ego. This thing in me that tells me I deserve what I don't have, and you better give it to me, and other things. And so they wouldn't give me a raise or what I thought I deserved, so I quit. And I went back to school. And before I did that, I was going out west, and I went out west with on a family vacation. And in the meantime, I had made a couple of changes, and I had been miserable, and Suzanne was aware, and I'd bugged her just about enough to where she was ready to have a cup of coffee with me and give me another shot. And I was lit up with some excitement when that happened. Super pumped, though, I'm not even going to lie. I couldn't wait, and had a cup of coffee with her and apologized. I made the first true, sincere amends in my life. That was severe. And I meant every word of it, and something was different about that experience because it was true and real. And my desire was not necessarily to even get Suzanne to love me again, but it was to make sure that she knew that I did not, that I was different, that I would be different, and that I was doing what was necessary to change and work on myself. And so went out west, and we started talking on the phone, and when I came back, I moved up to Kennesaw and went to Kennesaw State, my pack. It was awesome, and Suzanne and I ended up getting back together, and it was July 18th, 2008. That was a day and a year after she had crushed me. So it was pretty cool, and I thought, hey man, things are on the up and up, this is awesome. And I continued to try very, very, very hard, use my will, assert my will to do the best that I possibly could. And man, it was great for a couple of months, 6-7 months, it was awesome. And then 2009 came around, and man, it started being very difficult to have a good day, to have a good couple hours, you know. And then I started making some money and started getting better at what I did at school and, you know, doing all this stuff. And everything was like, would even out, and then it would all fall apart, even out and fall apart. So I graduate college, and I get a job working for the state. And at this time, I'm barely going to meetings, and I'm barely hanging in there, but I don't really realize it because I'm awesome. And I have this incredible ability to detach from reality when things are tough. I think I probably picked that up when I was little. But I didn't want to drink, you know, because when I went through the steps the first time, and when I went through the AA big book, the God had removed the obsession to drink from me. So I wasn't going to drink at all. Man, did I want to kill myself. And I'm getting real. I mean, seriously, I was like, you know, when I was detoxing in my mom's basement, the worst pain in the world, I thought I might kill myself, but then I'd ruin the chance to drink again if I did that. So I didn't do it then. Working for the state, pulling probably 70 hours a week, and miserable and scared to death. I was supposed to be an expert witness for the court, for the juvenile justice system and social work, and couldn't do it, and I didn't know why, and I couldn't make couldn't get my shit together, and I was terrified, and I wanted to die. Absolutely wanted to die, and that's what Bob was talking about. He called me when I came in, and I can't explain it. But everything, every paradigm, everything that I had tried to do, every way in which I asserted myself to this problem I was having, failed me. And thank God, because I gave up. I surrendered totally. That's why I told you the whole story, to get to this point. You know, this was sometime last year, and mind you, I had been through the steps with my current sponsor, my current teacher, before I drugged my feet, and that's not actually the recommended method that I would normally use now or then, but I drugged my feet because I was still pretty okay with the pain I was going through. When I got that surrender, it was over. Whatever illusion I was able to grant myself, whatever inability to grasp reality, I could not maintain it. It was like, okay, Andy, these things suck. You're going to die. You're probably going to do it to yourself. And the sick thing is, the whole time I was thinking, God, you know what? I will see that coming and I'll change when I notice it, okay? I will do that. That's ego. And what I found is I suffer from resurgence of the ego. This ego thing is huge, man, and it kills lots and lots of sober or not drinking alcoholics. What I realized in that moment, what I realized over the next year, or I guess the next couple of months, was the ego, it tricks me into thinking that cunning, baffling, and powerful part of the alcoholic mind is what that really has control over. And secondly, I felt this pain long before I drank. And because I hadn't had a drink in almost 7 years, 6 years, pardon, it's clearly not the alcohol ruining my life. It's clearly not the methamphetamine ruining my life. It's clearly not the symptoms of the deeper problem I have. Honestly, man, if I hadn't have gone through all that shit, that pain, that misery, that depression, that, like, high and low, that weeble wobble of cool, man, and not cool, man, and holy shit, and wow, and all that stuff, I would not have been able to notice, you know. So it was absolutely necessary for me to have that surrender. I found out later, you can't give that to yourself. You can't be at a place where you're ready to surrender all that stuff if it still works for you. See, because the reason I blew all that money, and the reason why I dated those women on the internet, and the reason why I treated people like shit is because somehow, some way, it turned on a switch in me that helped me. I used it, and it worked. The necessary help was there. But ultimately, it failed. I mean, and if anybody's hooking up with this, you know what I mean. It sucks. Bad. Feel alone. Like a raw nerve in the tooth doesn't even describe the pain you feel because you can't get away from it. I mean, you can't even sleep at all. You know, if you blow my head off, I'm sure I would be coming back if somebody's suffering because I needed that experience. You know what I mean? Like, I had to hook up with that to get to where I was ready to give up. I had to give up. And when I did, man, the most amazing thing happened. People looked at me like, holy shit, dude. Okay, let's work. I was like, what? Man, okay. And I was ready, and I took off. And, you know, then that was when I started working the steps again. And it was really amazing. What I learned and what I noticed was completely different than the first time. Not bad, not good, different. New. And that was necessary for me. I had to have a new experience with the steps. I was burnt out on what I was doing. Working the steps and then sponsoring a whole lot of dudes did not work for me after a time. Okay, so I needed to have something to deal with the resurgence of the ego, which I found was a new experience on a day-to-day basis with 10, 11, and 12. And then a current experience yearly or bi-yearly was working the 12 steps. When I reworked the steps, I noticed a lot was different. First step, it has two parts. I'm powerless, okay? And I experienced that raw. I was there. I knew it. But there's also this part of unmanageability, which means that there's nothing to do with alcohol in my life at all. I haven't drank in 7 years. Why should I manage it? Oh, okay, there's more to it. All right. So there's a sanity component in step two. There's a... you know, the higher power will restore me to sanity. Okay, well, what's sanity? Okay, so there's a mission there. I need to find that out. The third step was pretty simple. Am I willing to believe that this is going to work? Well, you know what? Every other avenue has utterly failed me. Utterly. I mean, completely. So I surrendered. I was ready. Yeah, sure. Right in inventory. Easy money, right? When all the things that I know I don't want to put on there don't work for me anymore, why in the hell would I keep it? Why would I keep any of that? It's garbage. Powerless. Garbage. And it weighed me down, drowned me. So I got rid of it on the paper. God already knew what was going on anyway. He was there the whole time. So whatever. You can't hide it. Read my inventory. And this time, mind you, I was having a completely new experience because I went through with three other dudes who had time sober, who had had the same experience that I had. My buddy Danny was in the room, and he was powerhouse. And I swear to God, man, I had never had such a powerful experience in reading my inventory with three other dudes and here and there in the same evening. Holy crap, power, man. Talk about getting connected with something that's real. It was impressive. I urge you, do not miss something new like that or like anything. Try it. Try whatever you've been, you know, thinking. If you're thinking about doing something radically different, try it out. What's going to happen is you'll figure out if it works for you or not. That's the difference between people that get scared and don't do something, and they try and fail. Okay, so after I read the inventory, we worked a couple of steps a night, and we did it in 4 weeks, around 4 weeks, probably 5 or 6, because things came up, and some nights took longer than others. But after I was ready to make amends, it was suggested that I make some amends to some people right away, and one in particular was weighing heavily on my mind. It was to my girlfriend. We've been together for almost 4 years now, and at that time we've been together for over 3 years. And I had really needed to make this amends for a long time. I didn't feel clean. I didn't feel right. So I went home and I did that. And you know what? It sucked so bad. It was the worst thing ever, okay? It hurt my heart that I could tell the woman that I absolutely adore and I intend to marry and I want to have a rest of my life with the things that I was thinking and doing, okay? And it wasn't really about infidelity, but it was just something that weighed heavily on my mind. Seriously. And she didn't really know what to do about it. And neither did I. And in that moment, I needed God. And I got God. And God was like, okay, this is going to suck. But I got this intuition thing again that said, this is going to suck, but this is where you need to be. Otherwise, you're not going to get anywhere else. So that's what happened, man. And then I stepped into making more amends that week. And I've got a list that I run with. I got them on index cards just in case something happens that I can do that. That intuition I'm talking about, it happens whenever. I mean, I'll tell you some more stories here in a minute. But that was when I also started doing a 10-step regularly, which is important. 10-step is really, really huge. I urge you not to miss this. This is really where the meat and potatoes of this whole thing is, the freedom after emptying out all the casualties and crap that you have, emptying out all of the pain and suffering, getting real with somebody and God for the first time. It opens up this gigantic space for God to move in, and all we need to do is that. God's not going to do for us what we can't do for ourselves, right? So He gave us some steps to work. We work these steps, clears the room for God to move in. That's when we affect the contact, all right? So I've got a contact with a higher power, and now it's my responsibility to keep that contact and grow it. So the 10th step, it says that I need to do that on a regular basis. I need to practice that patience, that tolerance, that timeliness, and I need to be aware of my actions during the day, which is super crucial for a guy like me. Cool that I'm here, but sorry about you. I don't really, glad you're driving too, but I just got to get somewhere, Really sucks that you're having a bad day, but I really want to tell you what's awesome about me, and I will ruin a conversation sometimes because I talk too much, okay? I'm aware of that now. I'm not perfect at it. Sometimes I can't stop. I try. And I make amends if it's necessary, okay? But, so that's that. And then the 11th step suggests that you meditate and pray. Big shocker, man. The first step has two parts. 11th step also, very definite, separate parts. Meditation and prayer. I say it that way. The book says prayer and meditation. I say meditation and prayer because it jumped out at me this time. It's like, oh, what is this? In the 11th step, it also says that I'm to progress spiritually. Okay, so if I stay still spiritually, if I don't progress, I'm moving backwards. And that's going to suck. I'm going to end up where I was when I had to surrender, or maybe dead. I don't know. When I had to surrender, it was suggested to me that the next morning I wake up and start doing a little meditation. So I started with a minute and a half. Like, okay, I'll be still for a minute and a half. It grew quickly. I was able to discipline with God's help, to 5 minutes, and that lasted for maybe a month or two, and then the bottom never falls out of this thing, man, and this is what I rest satisfaction in my day. This is how I get connected to God, and this is so cool, man. Like, meditation and spirituality, the more I get into it, the more shit just comes at me, right? I don't know why, other than there's God. My understanding of God is pretty simple, and there's an immutable law to the universe. And we're all, everybody in this room, everything, in anything that we can conceive can be broken down into atoms that behave by themselves no matter what we do. Okay, that's a higher power for me. Good enough. Let's wrap it up. You know what I'm saying? So that was always my thing. Science is pretty cool to me. And I started exploring that. And it really, I took that very seriously, the part where it says to perfect and enlarge our spiritual life is of the utmost importance. That kind of thing is a directive. And it says that's what's going to help you, what's going to save you. Do that. So I do that. In the 12th step, I work on a daily basis. I have some sponsors that I sponsor, and I love sponsoring guys. I like taking people through bodies of work, and I've been blessed to be able to do that a couple of times, and it's excellent. I'm going to go through the steps again. I went through in September, October. I'm going to go through again this month with a guy that I really like. Oh, by the way, after that job that I had, and I got to surrender, I like lost that job and got another one and lost that job. I had to work at Bed Bath & Beyond, man. And it was like, you ever wonder about ego? You ever wonder about like, you know, something that's not right, feeling not right, all that stuff? Yeah. And I was in the bed sheets, man. Like, come on, dude. Bed sheets? God, what's your plan, bro? I'm trying to move out, dude. So I fought that for a month, and then I surrendered that, too. I said, okay, fine. That will be done. Boom. God said, God, bitch. I got a call from this dude, right? My mom's best friend's husband. I'm just kind of spelling out what spells out God for me. My mom's best friend's husband is an architect, and he's doing this demolition and remodeling on this gigantic estate up in Ball Ground, Georgia, 10 minutes from where I live, 5 minutes from the cut I lived on, and very familiar to me. My the first girl that made me quit drinking lives on the corner of the road that I actually work on now. This guy was remodeling this place to create a 50-bed inpatient treatment center, the type of which that I made my teeth rattle with excitement. He was like, I'd love to interview you, man. I was like, oh, 10 minutes? He's like, no, man. You know. So anyway, I scheduled the interview, and I was bristling with excitement because I was so scared I wasn't going to find another job in this economy. And I had a lot of fear surrounding my worth as a person, as a professional, as a man, to be able to provide. And as soon as I was able to turn all that over, God, here you go, dude. So I got this job, man, and it was sweet. And what they said was what I wanted. And I had a list of ideals I was working with for my relationship, for my friendship, for my professional career, for my personal, you know, status. Through working in Body of Work, I realized that being fat is unhealthy, and that if I don't change the way that I eat and exercise, then I'm going to continue to do that. So I've lost weight too. I mean, all the things I felt like I was powerless over, when I surrendered to those things, the change was inevitable, and it's been amazing. So we opened up this rehab, and I started at the ground floor with everybody brand new, and these people that I'm working with are dedicated. They're so awesome. And it's cool too, because the guy that opened up the rehab knew the guy that sponsored my sponsor's sponsor in Texas, and worked with a guy named Chris and Myers Raymer the first 30 days that he was in sobriety. He went to meetings with the guys that I'm listening to on a pretty regular basis on my CD player. Like, the guys that are bringing power and giving me inspiration, these guys, that's what message they're carrying to my hometown, the place where no one got sober. They died or went to jail. Like, holy shit. That's power, man. That's what Bob, you guys probably heard Bob say a lot of stuff about power and, like, stuff. And, you know, imagine, like, you know, like, imagine lightning bolts, man. I'm getting pumped telling you about this. It's not like, it's not like some sales pitch, man. It's in my life. It just happened to me. Not, you know, I can't give you it. I can't give it to you. You got to experience it, man. And the cool thing is that you will or you won't, but people like us come in Alcoholics Anonymous and other fellowships because we're going to die. One way or another, that's going to happen, okay? But we're probably going to die because of our malady, our disease. You know, if you separate the disease words, you have ease and you have dis-ease, right? And I'm uncomfortable when I'm suffering, right? So, you know, it's either you get the result or you don't. You die or you live. I'm really thankful that that I was given the opportunity to surrender. I lost 3 friends last year and 1 this year. One of my best friends' fathers passed away from this. He had 7 years sober like I did. And instead of paying attention or whatever happened, I don't know, but he lost the chance to surrender. Hit it for a month and died, man. It's my best buddy. My best buddy also went out, too. A lot of my buddies that I got sober with share a ton of experiences with a drunk or dead. So it's not going to help everyone. But we're not all really unique. God's there, and the surrender is given to a lot of people. And I know that sounds kind of scary, but I really encourage anybody here that has a heavy heart when I say those kind of things, or gets excited and wants to know more about how to set contact and conscious contact, not with just the conception of God, but with God. You know, not getting a concept of God, but actually having that contact. I urge you not to miss this thing. This is what it's about. You know, it's not about getting up here and sounding like you're awesome or being really cool. You know, like, sorry about you, man, but I'm cool. Or like, you know, how much money you can spend in front of a girl you just met on the internet or any of that shit, okay? What it's about. I was there. It was cool and it sucked. But it's about getting hooked up with something that makes you feel the way you feel when you're hooked up with power. It's about being okay, but it's about more than just being okay. It's about bristling with the excitement that you have a chance to know your Creator. I mean, plain and simple. I mean, and by living life, I know Him every bit more. You know.